Iran here on the streets about 11:10. Hi, Bob. You said there's Food Not Bombs info about merchant pressuring activities to cut off the food supply?
Well, yes. On the same day as the no change, bullshit change thing went into effect, we were informed that Sergeant Vogel of Santa Cruz Police, Gary Bryden from the DA's office, Mike Rotkin, and Cynthia Matthews all came up, used their political power to shut Food Not Bombs down and went and in front of Chris Quinn and told her not to give food to Food Not Bombs.
Who is Chris Quinn?
Chris Quinn is the owner, one of the co-owners of New Leaf Market. And we have been religiously picking up food there. Now, supposedly, Santa Cruz AIDS Project is supposed to be doing the pickups, but they're not doing the pickups, so all the food's ended up in the garbage. And so now all the food is not getting up into the homeless people's stomachs, as well as families that work around Food Not Bombs get fed by all these food that comes in, so we're getting less food as well. You know, of course we get food stamps, but those food stamps run out very quickly. And we sometimes rely on Food Not Bombs food to feed our families. And now, thanks to City Council.
How long have they been doing this, do we know? How recent is this action?
This is within a few weeks. 2 weeks ago, we got our donation cut off.
Now, what I heard was that New Leaf has for some months been hostile to Food Not Bombs at a certain managerial level, but that the Mission Capitola stores had still been giving food out of the employees? Or
according to Chris Quinn, she loves us. We're there every day to pick up donations. We're there on time. So we get all this stuff out of the way. She wants us to do it.
Even the downtown store?
But all the authority figures using their political power say don't give food to Food Not Bombs. Because why? Because we're hard to work with, quote unquote.
Even though you have moved from Cathcart and Pacific's Friendship Corner all the way to the town clock in order to, quote, remove undesirables from the downtown or whatever.
Well, not only that, we did a campaign of trying to build bridges, sending letters to the DTA, sending letters to the City Council. We presented one in public. Sunshine did about 2 months ago. Presented a letter saying we want to build bridges. We want to start working together.
I remember that council meeting.
And the next thing you know, they start stabbing us in the back.
Well, I think it's time for you to start.
This is the cheapest program, social program, which is not on the back of your little red, yellow card that you get on the street. The only one that does not cost the city any money whatsoever, and then to keep it going, costs about $20 a month, maybe.
I've witnessed Elm Street Mission picking up food at the New Leaf place.
Well, supposedly, there's other groups that are doing it, but they don't come and pick it up all the time. They're flake, and we're the ones that were on time all the time.
Now
I can't understand how we're hard to work with if we've tried everything we could to try to work with the city.
Has this cut into Food Not Bombs' ability to serve meals? I noticed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Did you serve Sunday?
We served Sunday. I believe there was a salad served. That was it. And not to mention our River and Josephine lot is being chopped away little by little.
Which is where you used to serve on Saturdays and Sundays.
Still kind of do serve. We're not sure what we're going to do at that point.
That's being destroyed to make way for the turnstile. Or gateway,
sorry. The gateway. Heaven's Gate, I should say.
Heaven's Gate, yes. Well, 7 or 8 years ago, people were serving food right down here on the, at the town clock, actually, and the city responded by arresting people. Perhaps it's time to move the Food Not Bombs right down here in the middle of the downtown in order to dramatize the fact that it's time for the food to get out. If the merchants are going to try to throw you, I guess they want you to move to Harvey West, is that?
They don't want us to be at all. The first DTA meeting we met, they mentioned San Lorenzo Park. I said, if you go over there, it'd be nice. Because, people vote with their feet. And when they come downtown and they see that scene down there, they just leave right away. Well, I see plenty of people walking around right now. So plenty of people out here shopping, spending their capitalist money.
That's a long-term lament by the merchants, which is not going to end until every person is dressed in a Calvin Klein's or something. I don't know.
What it is any kind of alternative community that we have here is attacked by the Downtown Association. Look at Farmers Market. They're having to come up with all these parking assessment fees, these police fees that's supposed to police a farmer's market for 5 hours every Wednesday. We're lucky if they drive by or maybe walk in the farmer's market. They have to pay $3,000 or something more than that. I'm not sure exactly what the prices are. But the DTA never had to pay these when they took care of the farmer's market. And now all of a sudden, the farmers do. So that's going to drive them out of business. So there won't be any farmer's market. Problem solved, And now
what's the response of Food Not Bombs going to be? What should our response in the community be, Bob?
Outrage that these political leaders here in Santa Cruz are using their political power to shut down the cheapest social service that's feeding people, but actually building something in this community.
And indeed, Feed the People has already been shut down.
Pretty much.
The other group that was also serving about as much as Food Not Bombed.
Right. And we haven't been serving in Capitol Pacific for the last month or 2 months, and it's still the same down there. It doesn't have anything to do with Food Not Bombed, but we're a good-looking scapegoat.
And that was Skidmark Bob Duran, longtime Food Not Bombs worker and musician, who is getting into a controversy that we're going to follow with in greater detail in this week's edition of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor in Santa Cruz. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, every Sunday at 11 a.m. We come at you with interviews, sometimes some music, lots of reports, and continuing commentary by myself. I'm Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse, so-called because of the tattered bathrobe you'll occasionally see clinging to my bones and body as I walk in demonstrations that dramatize the right of homeless people to sleep at night, even though cities like Santa Cruz makes that activity specifically illegal for the overwhelming majority of people who live outdoors in Santa Cruz. So stay with us for Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, and if you have any comments or questions or additions to the show you think that should go on the air, any responses to what you're hearing and what you'll be hearing in the next 2 hours, grab a telephone and give a call to 423-4833, 423-HUFF. For short, HUFF is also an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. That's the group I work with. That's a phone number you can get a message to me through. And if you want, I'll broadcast your response on the air next week, so you can talk back to me or add your thoughts, however critical they may be. Again, the number is 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, or for the numerically inclined, 423-4833. Get back to the issue that you've just heard being discussed, the cutting off of food to Food Not Bombs by New Leaf Market and the general campaign by the Downtown Association and certain members of the City Council, specifically Mayor Cynthia Matthews and Council Member Mike Rotkin, to pressure Food Not Bombs and perhaps to encourage and pressure merchants like Chris Quinn of the New Leaf Market to cut off food to Food Not Bombs in order to purge the downtown of poor people, young people, who are gathering at different spots, most specifically at Friendship Corner or Hippie Corner, as some call Cathcart and Pacific, downtown in Santa Cruz. This campaign got some unusual publicity at the Tuesday City Council meeting last week. That was on May 13th. Every Tuesday, second and fourth Tuesday of each month, the City Council of Santa Cruz meets first in an afternoon session at 3:30 and then in an evening session at 7 in the evening. And at 7 in the evening, folks can come and speak for 3 minutes on any subject during a period that's called oral communications, for those of you who want to say something to the council, to the community, and to the broader watching and listening audience, since that evening session is broadcast on television, on cable television, to thousands of television sets throughout Santa Cruz. Whoever happens to be listening can tune into that. And in this particular session in oral communications, there was several people brought up the issue of Food Not Bombs being pressured out of town. The Food Not Bombs, as you heard, has already moved from downtown to the town clock, somewhat away from the central business district, across the street to an area that's visible to people driving by, but I guess Food Not Bombs did so for a number of reasons. One was to placate the merchants. Another was because it seemed a more comfortable area. Third was an attempt to, as Bob Duran put it, work with the downtown association, the city council, the police. And all this apparently proved to be not enough for the determined get those homeless people away and out of sight and back into the bushes crowd that's running town, that's running the downtown, and that's running the city council. Shadow Mayor Mike Rotkin, who was mayor last year and is now apparently the power behind the throne this year, even though Cynthia Matthews is the nominal mayor, apparently is not only determined to make sure there's no debate on the city council around the sleeping ban issue, the law that makes it illegal for homeless people to sleep or cover up with blankets after 11 o'clock at night in the city of Santa Cruz, but he also wants to make sure that there's no sustenance or food for people downtown, so as to discourage them from collecting in any numbers downtown. It's particularly significant that this is happening now because, as you heard, Feed the People, the other group that was operating for at least, what, a year and a half, 2 years downtown, giving away food at Cathcart and Pacific, has stopped feeding. And groups that do feed during the day, such as Karen Gillette's Homeless Community Resource Center, has announced, well, 2 days ago, 3 days ago, they announced they were stopping breakfast because of budget problems. There was only going to be one meal a day at the free meal, which is, happens every day at 4 o'clock out at the Homeless Community Resource Center on Coral Street, right where Highway 1 and Highway 9 meet, for all you hungry listeners who happen to have FM radios, as well as the fact that there are problems in other meal services. We've heard some good words about Elm Street Mission, which feeds on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. I guess on Friday it serves, it feeds at 5:45, on Saturday and Sunday at 5:30, and on Monday at 5 o'clock, and they're talking about opening up a Thursday feeding session, according to some folks I talked to a day or two ago. But there's just not enough food for folks, and to have the Downtown Association and the City Council going out of its way to eliminate food for poor people in order to drive people away is quite a commentary on the priorities of these folks, and should say something to those who put them in office and to those who are supporting the merchant side of this coalition with their business dollars. On top of this, of course, we've had the continuing controversy about the Real Change, Not Spare Change program. That's the little yellow slip program where they walk, where they encourage people who are going through the downtown not to give money to spare changers, but instead to hand them little yellow cards with phone numbers on them, supposedly with services that are helpful. In fact, of course, as we pointed out in past shows and has been amply documented, in fact, there'll be a story appearing in the Sunday Sentinel of May 18th on this subject, the numbers don't lead anywhere. They either lead to services that are full or services that are irrelevant. For instance, one number mentioned on the card is the very Homeless Community Resource Center, whose budget is being cut, and suggests that you ask them for shelter, and says that they give it between 6 in the evening and 8 in the morning. They do nothing of the kind. They provide no shelter. They are a pickup point for the Interface Satellite Shelter Program, which has a 28-person shelter ferrying service that takes you to the floor of a church, but only if there's space. And for the last month, there has been no space. And unless you're a pregnant woman, a very old and firm person, or possibly a very young woman, it's unlikely you're going to get into this program, according to inquiries we've made. So it's a hoax, these numbers given out on the little yellow cards that the merchants are putting out, which in essence is encouraging people to be colder toward those on the streets, to give money instead to social programs. And as we know, there's nothing wrong with giving money to social programs. That's fine. But a function of that money, a significant percentage of that money, is eaten up in administrative costs and salaries, never finds its way to homeless people. And obviously the best way to make sure that someone eats is to buy them some food if you're downtown. So if you're squeamish about giving away money, well, give them some food instead. There's a reasonable alternative. But don't be afraid to give away money if you feel like it. Don't let the merchants interfere with the natural course of your compassion. Indeed, it's interesting to read Karen Gillette in the City on a Hill Press. She contributed to an article in the latest City on a Hill, which is, of course, the publication put out by the University of California at Santa Cruz, the student publication, in which Gillette talks about if you want to see somebody smile, then give them a quarter, but if you're interested in more than that, realize that your money's not going to help them. This is an incredible generalization for someone to make, even someone who's been working with homeless people for 8 years, like Karen Gillette has. She's unfortunately in a position of some bias because her funding comes from the city, and she has a very tight alliance now with the merchants. Linda Steinau, the Downtown Association president, is speaking up for the Homeless Community Resource Center. Karen is pressing on with a campaign drive, claiming that she's $30,000 in debt. And I don't doubt that she is. Their $225,000-$250,000 budget is not coming from the federal government, not coming from the state as it used to. But this is no news. Karen Gillette knew this months ago, and so did the city council and her pals on the city council that she has relied upon to get funding from. And the cities actually are doing pretty well money-wise. They're putting out lots of money for architectural studies, for redevelopment, for destroying the beach flats area, and destroying housing down there on behalf of the Seaside Company and expanding the boardwalk. We're setting up this huge redevelopment in the so-called Gateway Project near the Homeless Community Resource Center down at Highway 1 and Highway 9. That's eliminating so many buildings, and it's eliminating the feeding area for Food Not Bombs, and is touted as a great new economic shot in the arm to Santa Cruz, but some critics, like David Silva of the Green Party, believe that this project will simply be a huge turnstile. That is to say, it won't be a gateway to the city, as they claim. Rather, it will be an opportunity for people to come in and buy their goodies at the super chain stores that show up there, and then just leave and not go down to Santa Cruz and deal with the knick-knack tourist scene down there, or as seems to be increasingly that way. So the city council is not spending its money on important projects, and indeed the Homeless Community Resource Center is a vital direct service to homeless people. It has been providing showers, lockers, access to a phone. It has been providing an afternoon meal and was providing a morning meal. It's a place for people to hang out, and that, of course, is the main reason that the merchants support the Homeless Community Resource Center. It is a place for folks to hang out and not in the downtown, and so it is a nice concentration camp, if you will, and I use the term in the more positive light, that it was originally used by the British when they were in South Africa in the beginning of this century. They had a war with the Boers, who were the Dutch Afrikaners, and in their war they created these huge concentration camps, places where they put the Boers and relocated them. Theoretically, of course, not to penalize them, not to degrade them, not to punish them, but rather simply to put them all together in areas for their safety and for the safety of British citizens and to eliminate the guerrillas down there. In fact, the same kind of thing is done with homeless people. They're not specifically by law forced to go to the Homeless Community Resource Center, but the combination of a few services down there that are important ones and the fact that the laws against ordinary behavior that's innocent, like sitting down, like peacefully asking for spare change, these kinds of laws are now, that were passed 3 years ago at the behest of the Downtown Association, are being enforced more and more rigorously, and those groups that were providing food downtown, like Food Not Bombs and Feed the People, are being harassed out of the area, and the ordinary citizenry is being propagandized with these little yellow hoax cards, being told that, oh no, you don't have to help people on the streets. Don't bother to help your fellow human being, your fellow brother and sister there. Just give your money to United Way. Put a buck in the merchant box, and realize you're otherwise you'd be helping some poor bum, some alcoholic, some junkie, some Looney Tunes character. That doesn't really help them to get a dollar. They don't need a dollar to go into a coffee shop to buy a cup of coffee, even though it's illegal for them to sit down near a shop outside on the street. Even though in many areas now, because of Neil Coonerty's cafe law, Neil Coonerty owns the bookshop Santa Cruz. When he was mayor, the year after he was mayor, actually, as city council member, helped pass a law that makes it illegal for people to sit down in front of sidewalk cafes to play guitars or musical instruments or even have political tables there. So the city's priorities seem to be to remove the homeless from the downtown. And in the meantime, we hear Karen Gillette crying, help, 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 and help our poor services out there. Our funds are being cut. And indeed, they are being cut. But Gillette knew they were being cut a year ago. And for her suddenly to start crying about the subject right now is interesting. It comes right in the middle of the merchant campaign to give to the Homeless Community Resource Center, don't give to poor people. So if she is saying, don't give dollars away to people on the streets, give them to us, I think that really has to be looked at. I think you should give to both people. I think you should continue to give money, fund the Homeless Community Resource Center. But obviously what Gillette needs to do is organize her people into some dramatic protests and demonstrations. That's what these kinds of services do in larger cities when they're faced with administrations that would rather spend lots of money on police and lots of money on parking lots rather than on poor people and on human beings. They stand up and they protest. But unfortunately, Karen Gillette of the Homeless Community Resource Center has always been very hostile to protest. With very few exceptions, she's not only put it down and attacked individuals like myself who try to organize and support protest, she's actually barred protesters from her meal. She has a huge display, a newspaper display, set up in one of her bays in one of the large industrial kind of shops that she holds the free meal and other services the Homeless Community Resource Center in, which specifically attacks me and other protesters for showing up there, a smear by the Sentinel back in 1990 when we were doing some organizing out there. She doesn't even understand that her meal was created by protest. Her Homeless Community Resource Center was created because for 8.5 months we went to jail at the town clock serving free food in 1989 until the city got tired of all the negative publicity and decided to set up the meal that she currently heads and the program. And they've always, the more we protest, the more they throw money at the Homeless Community Resource Center, because they realize that without the Homeless Community Resource Center, there would be even more significant protests downtown. And I think that, in fact, is what is going to be happening as the summer turns to fall, as the food stamp cuts take hold, as cuts continue in the services. I don't think that the Homeless Community Resource Center is going to close. That's a cry that Karen Gillette raises from time to time. And, you know, it's partially valid because you want to raise money. But unfortunately, she's also raised that cry in order to stop activists from organizing at the Homeless Community Resource Center, which is where homeless people are. When they demanded better food, she spread the word that their organizing would result in the shutdown of her budget and her funding. And she got people actually physically attacked. A woman named Linda Edwards was physically attacked after Karen Gillette started spreading these nasty rumors and false hysterical claims in the early 90s. And I'm happy to say that that performance was not repeated since 1995 or so, although there are problems that remain. Karen Gillette's board of directors on the Homeless Community Resource Center should be open to the public. Their meetings should be open. In fact, they're not. They should not really be open. They should encourage input from homeless clients. And when I brought this to the attention of the board, Karen Gillette went out of her way to make sure that the board meetings stayed closed, even though she was assuring everyone that the board meetings were open. And what she meant by open was that you had to go to her, tell her exactly what you wanted to say on their agenda, and then if she felt that was appropriate, she would give you a small section of time to do it, during which you would be ushered in, make your statement, and leave. But you wouldn't be able to see what else the board was discussing. You wouldn't be able to be present for the budgetary discussions, understand where the money was being spent, where it was going. And this is all a violation of the spirit of the Brown Act. Now, the county attorneys have ruled that nonprofit agencies like her Homeless Community Resource Center are not subject to the Brown Act. But that's not the point. The point is, should the Homeless Community Resource Center be open to the public, their board meetings, and should they be open to the clients who they are supposed to be serving? And it seems to me the answer is obviously yes, assuming that people are polite and act with decorum and don't disrupt their process. There's no reason that they shouldn't be open. But obviously, Karen feels there's something to be afraid of, and she doesn't want those board meetings open and has gone way out of her way to make sure they stay closed. And they are currently closed. And in fact, it was impossible for me to find out when they were happening. And when other people inquired, she wouldn't tell them either. I've recently received communications from Maggie McKay and Don Lane on the board of the Homeless Community Resource Center that they will be posting the times of the meetings, but the people will not be allowed to come unless they come through Karen Gillette and her permission after having reviewed and screened what these people want to say to the board. I think this is really unfortunate. I think the board needs to do a lot better. And there are maybe some good reasons why people don't want to give money to the Homeless Community Resource Center. And there are also plenty of bad ones. We know there's a lot of prejudice against homeless people. We know there's a lot of prejudice against the Homeless Community Resource Center. And I expect there's going to be even more trouble arising because of this huge development process, this gateway project of a shopping center that's coming in across Kitty Corner, right across the street from the Homeless Community Resource Center at Highway 1 and River Street. For us to believe that there's not going to be merchant pressure to move, close down, or otherwise restrict homeless people coming to and from that Homeless Community Resource Center is difficult for me to believe. I don't think that's likely. I think what is very likely is you're going to see a real process of extending the anti-homeless attitudes that are pervasive downtown to this outer area in order to bolster the business situation down there. About enough of me, let's get into a few interviews from the streets. So what's this about being arrested for picking flowers?
Okay, I was walking down the street, and I was over by a Java House,
And you know the big tree with the arms cut off of it?
Right.
Well, there's poppies and wildflowers at the bottom, right?
Right.
And nobody saw me. And I picked three poppies, right?
Right.
Nobody saw me, right? And I'm walking towards Java House. And I get to the sidewalk before the crosswalk, and an old man stops me. And he starts badgering me about picking flowers.
Right.
And I say, what's wrong with picking flowers? It helps the plant, if anything else. It spreads the seeds, helps them grow more flowers. He just was busting my ass over it, right? So I was getting really frustrated with his negativity and his anger towards me.
Right.
And I saw a policewoman coming towards us, and she didn't even know what we were talking about. She was just like a meter maid or something, you know, like a community service policewoman.
Right.
And I said, I tell you what, if you're so concerned about it, why don't you ask that woman to come over here and cite me? So he did.
Uh-huh.
So she came over, and she said, what's going on here? I said, I said, this man wants to cite me for picking flowers. And she's just like, oh, okay, well, maybe we can work something out. And he's like, yeah, but they're poppies, and he's breaking the law. And she's like, oh, well, in that case, sure, we'll go give him a citation. Why not? And I was like, that's good, because I want to take this man to court, you know? So she takes down my information. Then she decides to call up backup, because she feels a little bit uncomfortable about the situation, right? I got a pack on my back. It's got funky stuff on it. So she calls up another cop. Another cop rolls up in the car. He jumps out of the car, right? He's got his cop attitude on, right?
Right.
And he's like, can I see your identification, please?
What was his name?
I don't remember his name. He had dark hair, mm-hmm. Whatever. So he had an attitude, right? So he asked me for my ID. He does a prior check on me, right?
Right.
Sure enough, I've got a warrant out for previous ticket here in Santa Cruz for not having a light on my bike during the day.
Right.
Okay? So, he pulls my ass up. He says, please step to the car, sir, and put your bag down on the ground. And I say, well, what's going on? He didn't tell me that I was under arrest. He didn't tell me what was going on. He just told me to do that. I said, well, I don't want to put my bag down, so he told me what's going on. He said, and he pulled out his stick, and he said, you're going to do what I tell you right now, or else. And so I said, hey, I'm not going to get violent here. I just want to know what's going on. He's like, well, just put your bag down, put your hands on your head, and spread your legs, and I'll explain everything. So I got up and against the car. He asked me, do you have anything on your person?
Anybody watching while this
was? Everybody was watching. There were witnesses everywhere.
Right.
In fact, a few people from the Good Times are the Metro News were watching and wanted to do an interview, from what I understand. But
right.
Anyways, Esteban was watching as well, by the way. He took photographs.
Oh, good.
The man asked me if I had anything of importance in my pockets, a.k.a. a weapon.
Right.
Right? And I said, well, and I had other things in my pockets as well.
Uh-huh.
Things of personal substance, you know?
Yes.
And
medical usage.
Medical usage, yes, definitely.
that's legal.
And yeah, I know it's legal. So I thought to myself, well, I'll be honest and truthful and tell him what I have. And I figure he probably wants to know about the weapon. So I had a combination knife in my pocket, a utility knife.
Right.
The kind you fold up, you know, get from the hardware store.
Uh-huh.
Right? And so I said, yeah, I've got that in my pocket. He's like, well, empty the rest of your pockets. I'll put it on the hood of the car.
Right.
So I did. And then I explained to him, well, I want to know what about my Miranda rights and what's going on here. And he's like, well, what are you being charged for? I was like, well, I picked some flowers. And he bust out laughing. He couldn't
right.
believe it.
Right.
Now, by then, there's another cop already arrived on the scene with another car, right?
Right?
And he's watching and he's laughing.
Right.
And he's having a good time, right?
Right?
Taxpayers' money being spent on people having a good time laughing at an honest citizen being popped for picking flowers in Santa Cruz.
Right.
Okay? Wild poppy flowers while you're at it. So he's got all my stuff on the hood of his car, right?
Right.
And this is sitting in the middle, gleaming in the sun, right?
And we're pointing to, what is this, a little stash case?
This is my kingdom right here, see?
Right.
And it was, the kingdom was full of plenty of herbal properties, yeah. Herbal collectors, and this was in a little pouch with some tarot cards. He went straight for the tarot cards and pouch, pulled this out and said, what is this? And I go, it's oil. And you can smell, see? You can smell, right? It's pretty strong.
Right.
And he goes, yeah, I go, what? He goes, what is it? I go, it's oil. He goes, no, is it urine? Urine? What? Yeah, sure, I'm on the DUI, I'm going to the DUI clinic after this, okay? You know, like, no, it's fucking, I'm like, that's oil. Why don't you smell it? And he smells it, and he laughs again.
Yeah. Right.
Meanwhile, he's looking right at this and doesn't even ask me what's inside of it.
Right.
And he decides that he's not going to take me in, and that he's just going to give me a ticket for another court date, for my previous ticket.
For your bike in the daytime.
Meanwhile,
no light, no bike in the daytime warrant.
Yeah, meanwhile, two more cops footbound cops on bikes have rolled up and are cracking jokes. So there are four, five cops,
right.
Two cars, and two bikes.
Right.
At the corner of Cedar, and what's the corner that Java Hat House is on?
Locust, Walnut, Elm.
And there's about 15, 20 people totally stopped. Cars are watching. Everything's going on.
Right.
And everybody's laughing.
Right.
And that's flower crime in downtown Santa Cruz. This tape is being recorded on May 17th, 1997, to be played on May 18th, every Sunday at 11 on 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, which you're listening to. You get to hear a show on civil rights that I do. This one's going to last for about 2 hours. And listeners are, as you know, invited to call in to 423-4833. And it's really rare to find folks calling in, but today someone did call in. Today was also the occasion of the Wine, Cheese, and Jazz Festival downtown, where the Pacific Avenue was completely blocked off, and there was sort of, it became a walkathon with a lot of booths and tents and little food areas set up downtown. Very pleasant. A lot of folks came there. Very few homeless people, however, were on the streets, and we got a call from one woman who police had specifically tried to drive away from the area. Her name was Robin, and here she is. Your radio up a bit to catch some of the dialogue here. She called in on a phone where we were unable to record it too clearly, but you can still hear her, and you can still hear what she's going through. So, what's your name?
Okay, my name is Robin.
And, Robin, you're calling me about 12:30 on May 17th.
Right.
And where are you calling from? This is what, in Capitola?
No, this is on Santa Cruz.
Okay, what, Pacific Avenue, or?
This is, I think it's Pacific, I can't. Right in front of the theater.
Which theater? Cinema 9, Del Mar?
I think it's Santa Cruz Theater. I think it's Cinema 9, I have no idea.
Okay, and what happened?
Okay, today is Wine and Jazz Festival.
Right.
And I was told about 9 o'clock this morning that I could sit there and do like I normally do, which I do, which is panhandling.
Right, and how were you panhandling?
You know, I have a sign.
What does your sign say?
My sign says spare change for food.
Uh-huh.
So it says anything else, and I've been clean and sober for a long period of time.
Right.
And I was told earlier by two policemen that I could sit there and panhandle.
Right.
Now I was told by a police officer, I didn't catch his name, he didn't give it to me.
Right.
His number is 177.
Right.
That I could not sit where I was sitting, which I wasn't in no one's way.
Right. Uh-huh.
And I was told by two different police officers, plus the downtown host, I could sit there.
Right. Well, it's quite legal for you to sit where you're, if those two cops told you that initially, where you're sitting, because I'm sure that they would have told you otherwise. This other cop is just trying to kiss the ass of the merchants with you, I'm afraid.
Because, see, I haven't been in Santa Cruz very long. I'm from L.A.
Welcome.
And I've been here for about 2, almost 3 weeks now.
Uh-huh. And how did he do that?
He just turned around and told him to get off the promenade and stay off until
Monday. You didn't recognize this cop or catch his name, huh?
No, he's just 177. He's a Caucasian male, stands about, let's say about 5'9", 6'1". I didn't see his eyes. I don't know if he's...
He's 177. Well, we're coming down, you know, we're having a demonstration for homeless rights, interestingly enough, in about half an hour,
yeah.
Right across from where you are. And what has Jim's response been to this?
Jim and I are fed up with it.
Uh-huh.
And I have a boyfriend that's fed up with it, and I have a couple other friends that are just fed up with it.
Uh-huh.
Because I understand Santa Cruz is, you know, a combination of rich and poor, you know, in between middle class and upper class.
Mm-hmm.
But they should not turn around and look down on the homeless, because I don't break into, I'm just saying this, just, you know, I've never broken into anyone's house before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what you mean.
And I'm fed up with it.
Well, you know, maybe we should, you're going to be present for this demonstration at 1 o'clock?
I will be here. I'm not going nowhere special.
Good.
good. We'll just hang out, and, I mean, well, of course, easy for me to say, because you're going to take the bust if and when the cops decide to fuck with you, but I don't think he will. I think the worst he'll do is write you a ticket that won't stand up in court, but then again, that's me guessing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I would say that what you should do is get a bunch of people like Jim and others to agree to sit down right with you with signs right next to you if anything such thing happens again. Okay.
When you come down here.
Yeah, tell him I'll be down in about 15 or 20 minutes.
Okay.
Robin, is there more I should know?
Well, you know, there's also something else that bothers me. The downtown hosts, okay?
Right.
You've heard about this, something changed, that's very, let's make
Oh, yeah, I know. I wrote a flyer about it.
Yeah, that's a little bit going way too far.
Right.
I was sitting there on the promenade about maybe 4 or 5 days ago.
Right.
4 or 5 days ago. And I had one of the downtown hosts just turn around and kept bothering me.
And what did he do?
You know, passed by me, say, you know, he kept, how can I say this? I was sitting there panhandling. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
It's hot out here and I haven't had nothing to drink yet.
Right. We'll bring some water down.
Thank you. I was sitting there with my sign that says, no, you know, spare change, whatever. And there's a gray-haired old man. I don't know his name. Don't have no reason to. Kept coming by, you know, saying that, you know, remember the spare change, not this change. And I said, yeah. I don't get SSI, and I am a mental patient. I don't get no SSI. I have no income coming in. I turned around and told him that. Then this woman turns around 2 days later and hands me this, you know, little piece of yellow paper stating we can go and get food and crap.
Right.
Well, he's standing right there smirking at me. Like, you know, like I'm all big boss and this. I turned around and told him, I said, I hope you feel happy. Because he was bothering me for the last 2 days before she came up.
Well, people can be weird, you know. I think what you need to do, Robin, is talk about this at the rally. So not only will you, I can broadcast this on radio tomorrow at Free Radio Santa Cruz, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
But you also can talk about it at the rally, and I'll be down, and I'll see you then.
Okay, we'll be in front of the theater. I'm going to be standing next to Jim, letting him know what we're planning on doing here.
Sounds good.
Okay.
All right.
See you in a while.
Bye-bye.
And later, when I spoke to Robin on the streets, and Robin's a short black woman who's been doing some panhandling downtown for the last week or so, she hadn't encountered any further harassment from police, and I invited her to call in, and I invite anyone who has a problem with police or hosts or private security guards or some more information to add to this ongoing discussion to give a call to 423-4833 and leave a message of any length about what's been happening to you and what's really going on, because the news has to get out. That's the only way we can change things. That's the only way we can make sure that abuses that have happened to you don't happen to other people. Of course, we can't make sure. We can only try, but we're more likely to be successful if you get your information to us. The rally mentioned was a rally for the rights of homeless people, as well as certain other issues, such as Mumia Abu-Jamal's freedom, the freedom of the Diné people, the right to remain on their land at Big Mountain, and the rights of folks in Santa Cruz County and elsewhere to be free from harassment for their use of medical marijuana. As it happened, the demonstration became a sort of a person-to-person affair. Not many folks showed up, and we were able to talk instead individually to a number of the thousands of tourists who were at the Arts, Wine, and Jazz Festival. Medical marijuana is a subject, of course, of increasing importance. After the passage of 215 last fall, supposedly legalizing the cultivation and use of medical marijuana for medicinal purposes, there continues to be harassment of medical marijuana users in many areas, and particularly in Santa Cruz. This is graphically illustrated by a case I've continued to follow and update you on, that of Jane Kaiser, an anti-psychiatric abuse activist who heads PIRC, Patients Inmates Rights Collective, and was jacked up, put into a pain compliance hold, dragged to the floor, and had her medical marijuana stolen from her back in January, and is still facing trial in June. The medical marijuana clubs of Santa Cruz, San Jose, and San Francisco are reportedly planning a significant civil disobedience demonstration at her trial, or possibly even if she doesn't go to trial, because other issues are beginning to show up on the radar screen, specifically CAMP, the Campaign Against Marijuana Production, the helicopters over your house
program, which Sheriff Tracy again apparently wants to use more money from the federal government to produce more police harassment of people around medical marijuana. And there was an outcry against that at the Board of Supervisors last week. And there's also an individual who may be new to many listeners of Free Radio Santa Cruz, who's concerned with opening up a third or fourth cannabis club here in Santa Cruz. We're going to interview him now, or rather you're going to be able to hear an interview with him. His name is Bob Campbell. He ran the River Street Mini Shelter for a year or two, and then ran the Pioneer House program for folks designated mentally ill, and also was involved in community health. Westside Community Health Center, I believe it was called, now works in San Jose. He's interested in medical marijuana. He also has some interesting comments to give us about the Homeless Community Resource Center's budget crisis. That's the only real resource center in town for homeless people, and it's a very significant thing when it's in crisis, even though, as I said earlier in the show, I think that this current crisis could have easily been anticipated and seems to me a little contrived. Not that it's not a real crisis, not that we don't have to support it, but why hasn't Karen Gillette and her board of directors organized support for this previously? I don't know. Maybe you should call them and find out if they'll return your calls or let you into their meetings, which they apparently don't do for me much. Anyway, here's Bob Campbell talking about medical marijuana and the Homeless Community Resource Center, among other things. Talks about the Santa Clara County Board of Supervisors meeting. That's the county in huge metropolitan city about 20 miles to the northeast over Highway 17, for those of you without cars or maps. Anyway, here he is. Check him out. Board of Supervisors meeting around the issue of medical marijuana and the regulation of that. Is that right, Bob?
Yes, that's true.
And what's going on in San Jose? Well, I know there are two rival clubs, and one of them is being hassled and prosecuted for, being too lax or something?
Well, I think the overriding idea is that county of Santa Clara desires to try to regulate how the process will happen at the various medical marijuana distribution sites. And what was on the agenda was what kind of regulation, what do we have authority to regulate here? And a lot of it had to do with the zoning regulations and regarding their own zoning policies and the law in, 182 that was passed?
152. Right.
Yeah. So a lot of it had to do with, they have to grow it at the site. What is the maximum distance we can be from schools and churches? Can they smoke on site or not? Like that.
Uh-huh.
And basically, they put together a list of things, about how far places had to be from churches and schools, and how far each distribution site had to be from another distribution site, the maximum size of a dispensary, no smoking on site. And I think as a result of that, especially the one in downtown San Jose, was in danger because it has some proximity to a church that's within the restricted boundaries.
Wow, now there are at least two such groups in San Jose, right?
Well, that part, I'm not sure about that. I know about the one down on Race Street in San Jose, but I'm not sure about the other site.
How many people showed up at this board meeting, do you know? Was it well attended?
No one spoke from the medical marijuana coalition.
Were they there?
The board meeting at all?
Were they present, or were they?
I don't know who was present in the crowd.
This was a board of supervisors, or
it was a board of supervisors meeting.
You know, it sounds like if they're not taking testimony from the very people who are doing this, it's an attempt to restrict and to I don't know necessarily to regulate as to destroy in this situation, but.
The only person who spoke about it was a neighbor in the area
where one of the two sites might be, and his concern was about the proximity of the two sites together and how their particular neighborhood seemed to be the only one that was providing the service of medical marijuana, and voiced concerns about that. So it was a public hearing format. People could talk. No one from the coalition made themselves known in the audience that they wanted to speak.
Was there a big turnout?
There were a number of people in the audience, but they were also doing a lot of social services budget decisions that day, and my feeling was that most of the people there were from various social services agencies throughout the county.
Now, you yourself are talking about possibly opening up, I guess it would be a third medical marijuana service here in the Santa Cruz County area?
Well, I'm looking at what is the county currently doing? What is the city? What are the cities currently doing regarding regulating medical marijuana in Santa Cruz? What are the what's the current disposition of the of law enforcement? And what kind of rules and regulations would a person have to go through in order to be able to establish a place? I think it would be a good service, especially in Santa Cruz. It seems that there would be a number of physicians that may be friendly to the concept of marijuana for medical uses, and it seems that there might be a number of people that would really benefit from that service here.
There already are two services, one headed by Valerie Corral or involving her, another called Women Against Medical, Women and Men's Alliance for Medical Marijuana, some such thing.
Well, I'd be interested in trying to find out a way of connecting with those people.
Plus, there's the Cannabis Club, which is... The Cannabis Club, of course, is right downtown. It's at Cedar and Maple Streets, and you can probably get in touch with them through their attorney, Kate Wells. She's in the book.
Right.
And those are two of them, and there may even be a third, you know, I'm certain the number of people are growing it for their own personal use now that the proposition has passed.
Yeah, I understand there's a provision where you can grow your own for your own medical purposes.
Right, yeah, you need a doctor's prescription. There is, however, you know, still major hassles going on. The case of Jane Kaiser is one I've been following on Free Radio Santa Cruz. And Kaiser was an older woman who heads PERC, Patient Inmates Rights Collective. When she went through the metal detectors of the courthouse,
right,
she was assaulted and literally physically assaulted, dragged to the ground, screaming. And her medical marijuana was seized and her card was seized, and she's charged now with four misdemeanors. And we're hoping that she will take this case all the way, because apparently there's a lot of support, not just from the local medical marijuana clubs, local cannabis users club, but the... clubs in San Jose and in San Francisco are talking about coming down and lining up at the metal detector and getting busted on the day of her trial.
You see, there's a whole issue.
Bob, tell me again, what you say there was an issue regarding transportation? Run that by me one more time.
Right, the transportation of marijuana from one place to another. So one of the arguments was, look, medical marijuana can only be distributed in these medical marijuana dispensaries. Why can't the pharmacy at Long's have medical marijuana available so that people can come in with their prescriptions like they do for any other medical prescription?
There was also an issue as to why can't it be delivered to one's house, particularly if one is ill, as many HIV or AIDS people are, you know?
Right. So it came down to... the transportation issue about it's illegal to transport, I think they were identifying the legislation, saying that the legislation says that you can't transport it from one place to another, which is what the council, which the Board of Supervisors in San Jose was saying. Since you can't do that, then you need to grow it on site, and you can't distribute it from that site, take it from that site, you know, to Long's Pharmacy in order to be sold because of the transportation issue.
Well, that's fine, but there's also laws against possessing it and laws against selling it and laws against giving it away. So I think you're going to run into laws no matter where you go until such time as the courts rule that the proposition is, you know, more binding than state and federal law. And that's a good question as to what's going to happen with that. But I don't know if we should start running for cover based on, you know, concerns about these reefer madness laws that have been on the books for, you know, half a century.
Well, you know, it was pretty convenient at that time, I guess, with Hearst and his capitalistic priorities and sort of naming marijuana and hemp as the great evil in order to help him build his own empire, I suppose, where it all began.
Yeah, there's a lot of analysis recently in the last decade by Jack Harrar and others around the fact that marijuana was criminalized to help out not just Hearst, but petroleum,
paper-making industry, the whole cotton industry, all of that.
Cotton industry, the oil industry, I mean, one says, oh, another grandiose conspiracy theory, but when you look at the details, a lot of the uses of hemp, are real, and though I have yet to see, frankly, a critical counter-reply, I'd love to have somebody at the university attack some of these arguments with surgical analysis and do some sort of a serious debate on it. Instead, you get these cheesy, half-baked government arguments that are just based fundamentally on propaganda. I don't have anything to say.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, the more clubs that start, the more it'll get tested, the more it'll get defined, and eventually it'll either be, you know, institutionalized or, it'll remain a criminal activity, you know.
There was actually a survey mentioned in yesterday's Examiner, San Francisco Examiner, that pointed out that marijuana... let me quote it. Pot use doesn't boost death rate. Largest study ever finds no link between marijuana and mortality. Published by Dr. Stephen Sidney and a team of researchers Wednesday in the American Journal of Public Health. Pot smoking was associated only with increased deaths due to AIDS, a finding that researchers attribute to the influence of related behaviors like drinking alcohol, taking other recreational drugs. Largest study ever done with the health effects, no association between, for example, marijuana smoking and death. There's unlike with, say, cigarettes. And it's a team where a questionnaire was administered to 65,000 San Francisco and Oakland Kaiser patients who had checkups between 1979 and 1985. And the patients were followed until 1991. So this is interesting, you know. I mean, of course, spending your time trying to, you know, prove this is like trying to reinvent the wheel, right? But there it is. So there you are. You're going to be a hot center of controversy, eh, Bob?
Well, I doubt it, but you know, it's fascinating to me, I think that there's a real service that could be provided here to people in the community, and
plus a few bucks, eh, Bob?
And a few bucks, yeah. It's a good capitalist enterprise, you know. Medical marijuana dispensaries, the new capitalist enterprise of the 1990s for everybody that was born in 1950 and doesn't know what to do with their time.
Just trying to put all the kids back on the track again, eh, Bob? You should be ashamed of yourself.
I am.
Well, that's good. You know, Bob, you were also, head of the River Street mini shelter, as I used to call it, back in 1990?
Yeah.
And I don't know if you read this morning's Sentinel?
No, I'm reading it, actually. When you called, I was just on the back page part of it, where they're cutting showers out, and Karen's taking a pay cut, and community, we as a community need to mobilize. Hopefully this will be a call to arms.
According to Linda Steinau, that's the same woman who's been telling people not to give money away to poor people, but to hold it off for these wonderful charity needs that apparently are now coming around the pipe. We're having a demonstration today at 1 o'clock downtown, some of us, to support rights for the homeless and also some other issues. Medical marijuana is one of them. End the harassment of medical marijuana users and to free Mumia Abu Jamal, there we go, who's still on death row, and also to deal with the plight of the Big Mountain people, the Diné people over a state or two over. And I guess one of the reasons I'm calling you is because I know that you may have a certain sense, although you haven't been in this business for a while, of what's the situation with charity giving? Do you have any sense of how that was when you were working for the River Street? I know you were mostly funded by government money, right?
Yeah, not so much unlike the Resource Center itself.
Uh-huh.
Yes, mostly by government funding. As a matter of fact, about 96% worth.
Wow, that mean River Street was 96%? Or?
Yeah.
So
it's interesting that, you know, the word around fundraising is that fundraising is down. People aren't making as many donations as they were 5 years ago. But this is a trend that has been going on for quite some time as the economy has gone through its difficult periods and even though the stock market was doing, you know, pretty well, you know, giving was pretty much down, especially local giving.
What do you attribute this to? Is it, you see this as a long-term trend? You see this as related to economic problems that people who have money have? Is it a compassion fatigue, as stated in the article in today's Sentinel? Is it, have homeless activists trying to assert the right, for example, to sleep outside when there's no legal place to sleep elsewhere, hardened the public sentiment against homeless people? Or alternately, have big programs like Community House, which are now several million dollars down the road, and haven't appeared yet.
And a lot of weeds growing on their site, yeah, I noticed.
There's a lot of weeds on the site of Community House right out there at the river and Highway 1, and no sign of those trailers.
Oh, not one.
You know, first of all, is there a drop in charity donations? Are those claims accurate? If they are accurate, why is that happening? What's your analysis?
Well, you know, specific to the Resource Center, I don't know what their development program is all about. I know that I personally have given and seen the letters and that kind of thing. I don't know what their own program is about. So I don't know if they're talking in general fundraising is down everywhere or specific to their own program. But in general, fundraising is, people are giving a little less than they have been giving. And especially to newer programs. So people, when they are giving, they're giving to programs that are much more established and have much more of a long history, which is sort of certainly part of any fundraising strategy, is the viability of your organization. So, you know, universities and colleges and, you know, Catholic Charities and large nonprofit organizations, United Way, their giving is actually up. But in the smaller community nonprofit settings that are very focused on very specific things, fundraising is down.
So the organizations...
This AIDS project is even experiencing a similar situation.
Really? The organizations most likely to waste the money, that is to say, large organizations with lots of overhead and a history of gulping down money en route in the middleman hunger scene, are the ones actually, ironically, most likely to get the lion's share of the money in this period?
Right.
What about government expenditures? It may be true, well, it certainly is true, that federal and state funding is down, or at least federal spending, as I'm not sure about state funding, since some of that stuff was kicked back to the states. Locally, cities are spending lots of money doing other things, like architectural studies for the... for this and that, I'm thinking of new police stations. Is the city council wisely spending its money? Does it have $30,000 to give to the Karen Gillette's Homeless Community Resource Center to keep it afloat? I mean, should this issue even be coming up? I mean, $30,000 sounds like a lot of money to you and me, but it's we got an $8 million police station coming up. I mean, it's really a drop in the bucket in some sense, right?
Well, you know, it's interesting that the program... programs get started on federal funding, and someday the federal funding is going to go away. The community benefits by the federal funding for quite some time, but then when it goes away, suddenly the community has to be accountable for continuing programs that they've been using for years. I mean, it's interesting to note here that 65% of the community center's funding comes from one federal source, and that being the emergency shelter program. So, local government ought to be making a plan for this, or you know, they probably tell the Resource Center that they're supposed to be planning for this, and what are they going to do about it? Well, you know, a program like the Resource Center, if it's not going to survive on government funding, you know, it's not going to survive.
So, by this you mean, in other words, this call for private donations is really sort of disingenuous, that they are primarily existing off of government funding, right?
I don't think it's disingenuous. I think, you know, where else are they going to go if the government is actually telling them that, you know, we're not giving you any more money? there's really no other place to go than to the community. And, you know, what part of the community is going to come up? $30,000 is a fair piece of change to raise in a community of the size of Santa Cruz. You know, they may get some serendipitous donation of somebody in the community that says, geez, you know, I really believe in this. Here's $30,000. And that may well happen. But what's going to happen next year? You know, is that person going to get $30,000 every year? Because next year, it's $30,000 this year. Next year, it'll be $35,000. And the year after that, it'll be $40,000. And the year after that, it'll be $45,000. So
what about the local government? The local government is not any less... I was asking you that question. Where do they have money to do this?
Well, that's a good question. I haven't seen the budget for as being proposed for the city, for example. But what's going on mostly is that government funding is, federal funding is putting the squeeze on state funding, and state funding is putting the squeeze on county funding. I mean, part of the $2 billion revenues that Wilson now has a lot to do with the squeeze that has been put on county governments lately. But oddly enough, the more local jurisdictions, city governments, have fared quite well over the last number of years because their revenues have not been depleted to the degree that the county governments had. Plus, you know, they have ways of getting more revenues. You know,
ways to make you pay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for example, you know, what the city through their community development block grant program has decided that the River Street Shelter will be an ongoing grantee. Well, you know, maybe it's time for that to change. Maybe the city is going to decide that the CDBG funding that they give to the River Street Shelter ought to go to the Homeless Resource Center, and the River Street Shelter, because it's been around for such a much longer time, should do something about finding more of its own funding.
River Street Shelter is a program that helps about 35 people at any one time, and usually we're talking about 1 or 2 month stays there, so we're talking about helping, 200 people a year at max.
Yeah.
Whereas the Homeless Community Resource Center serves hundreds of people each day.
Right.
And it's in the emergency services line.
Right. I think that's the point. I mean, I think one of the considerations. I mean, yeah. So the River Street Shelter is really more of a transitional type of program rather than quote-unquote emergency shelter.
Well, that's all the rage, you know, among the merchants and the downtown politicians, which is to, you don't want to give money to make these people dependent, you want to transition them out of homelessness, all this sort of great mythology that you can transition a bunch of people out of homelessness when there just aren't jobs, job training, and housing available for them when they come out of it.
Well, you know, truly, if we were going to transition people out of homelessness, we would be transitioning democracy out of existence, or at least capitalist democracy as we know it, because, you know, as we all know, in our system depends on people that are unemployed. For example, every time the unemployment rate starts going down, everybody gets worried because the interest rates are going to go up. So people who have money don't want the interest rates to go up, so it's better for people to be unemployed and poor.
Still with me?
I think so.
Oh, good. So
might be out there a little bit, but yeah.
You're pretty far out there, actually. Wow. So what activists have been blamed in the past for contributing to a sort of a bad image of homeless services and people, for instance? It's been said that the reason that contributions are down is because people don't like the agitation that happened last year at City Hall, let's say, to try to end the city's anti-homeless sleeping ban or modify it. There was a 7.5-month protest in front of City Hall. And it's also been said that the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program's attempt to set up Coral Street Open Air Shelter Program for 2 years, 1994 and 95, where people were sleeping in the field near Highway 1 and Highway 9, field that is now a locked field and is supposed to be the location for the new community house project, but hasn't been for the last, what, 19 months or something. But, you know, the image of all these poor people being located in one place or the agitating for their rights, so that somehow turns off charities. What's your reading on that?
Yeah. Well, you know.
About charitable donations.
Yeah. Well, you know, my own personal experience is I give to the Resource Center because I believe it's delivering a very important service to people who need something. And if those people who need something get what they need, then they'll get what they need, and that's kind of like, I guess that's the purpose. If they get what I want them to have, well, I guess I'd probably be doing something different with my money, you know. You know, there's just not much tolerance for people who say that they need something and they want you to give it to them, but that doesn't mean that they're going to march to your beat, and you know. And for some reason, some people think that if you give somebody money, then they should do what you tell them to do.
Well, do you think that activists downtown doing protests have resulted in any direct way in a cutoff of money to homeless services?
No. I think the cutoff to homeless services is the prerogative of people who have control over the funding. And if they want to fund the project, they will. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the... It doesn't matter what the homeless advocates do, and for that matter, to some degree, it doesn't matter what people in the neighborhood think if there's a predisposition to locate a program in some particular neighborhood. That's what's going to be done.
So, in I guess my question has always been, why is the city council, or you were putting it in more intimately or more specifically in terms of the internal management of the Homeless Community Resource Center, why haven't the council and the Resource Center in the last 5 years gotten together some kind of city funding for this?
Well, maybe that's what's going to happen now. I mean, maybe up until now, it's been good enough running on a $250,000 a year budget, and it's been providing a good enough service the way that it is, and they've had this funding source going along, and we're going to ride this funding source until it's gone. Now that it's gone, we may have to make a different plan. We may have to find some revenues in order to be able to do this. And I believe the city is dedicated to the Homeless Resource Center. I don't believe it'll close.
Yeah, I think you're right. I've always felt that way. And I think when I hear Karen's alarmed cries for more money, you know, I mean, I can appreciate fundraisers like to raise money one way or another, but I remember regular use of this argument against homeless activists who were demonstrating for increased services in her program, or for less restrictive laws downtown, or for basic human rights, as I saw it. Her response has been in the past, though not so much recently, to actually move to quash demonstrations by claiming that the demonstrators were threatening her funding sources, and that their actions would result in the closing down of the program.
Yeah, well, you know, and I think that Karen's you know, done a great job at being able to identify what the Homeless Resource Center is about, find people who are coming to the Resource Center that live with that kind of an identity, and sort of, you know, very successful in providing an image of the Resource Center as a place that people who are homeless are coming. And you know, they're not the people that the community is so upset about. So you know, I think she's done a great job in that way. And I think that because of the good job she's done, the local jurisdictions will find a way for the Resource Center to survive, because everybody realizes that it's a vital resource in the community.
Well, that's a positive perspective. I think the flip side to that is that the city has been, and particularly the Downtown Association, which is appearing in you know...
I thought that was really amazing.
Yeah, well, no. The Downtown Association and Karen Gillette have always been, you know, somewhat close in some respect, because the Homeless Community Center has always served the function of getting people away from the downtown, off the mall, out of sight,
right.
Which is what gentrification folks downtown want. They do not want to see poor people in public places. That's something that they consider to be deleterious to the business community, frightening to the horses, and all that sort of thing. I've always been rather cynical about it, and I've always felt that's one of the main reasons that Gillette's program will never die. You know, even if she was found straddling a horse at high noon and on Pacific Avenue, wouldn't make any difference. They need her in order to draw off potential discontent that was really manifesting itself very severely before that program started. We were serving people at the town clock,
right.
Round the clock, in more ways than one. And they started their food program because they got tired of arresting us for serving food at the town clock.
Right, and that was the kernel of the whole thing in 1987 or 89.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And of course, Karen's
November right, actually.
Yeah, Karen has never taken, you know, has never acknowledged that. I guess it's because we never should expect her to. Although,
well, she was part of that.
Well, she was part of that movement, but she has always claimed that her funding and her program was not an outgrowth of protest. In fact, of course, it was a direct outgrowth of protest.
Well, yeah, I know. Just like the River Street Shelter wasn't, and the county and city funding wasn't an outgrowth of Jane Imler's hunger strike or Peter Kuroda's insistence that, hey, I'm doing it because of divine intervention.
Right. Divine intervention against the deadheads or something, yeah.
Well, you know, in his way of thinking, what he was providing was something that was being called for, and in the days when he started it, there wasn't anything about deadheads.
Right, I understand. Well,
and that grew out of a thing about him trying to survive in what he believed was right, which is really what we're coming down to here.
Yeah, for those of us who don't know who are listening to this broadcast, what we're talking about is in the early 80s. Peter Kuroda established a free food service for people in the Beach Flats, which was then later moved to his church, Holy Cross Church, and is now the St. Francis Soup Kitchen Meal. And actually, a number of workers, activists who were originally with him at the beginning, left his program because he began discriminating against different groups of people and wouldn't serve them unless they were morally upright and so forth. There's been an ongoing battle that's gone back and forth in that. The person who took over his program, Lee Loboa, continues to be erratic on this matter. Well, you know, one day she'll throw you out, the next day she'll invite you back in. So, hard to say. But this program doesn't exist off government funding. It exists off of private, I guess, donations of Catholic.
That's right.
So,
completely.
So
it won't take any government money.
Right. Well, and therefore they don't have to deal with anti-discrimination laws and so forth. That's like I said, an upside for them and a downside for people who are not in favor at the time. Well, I've had you on the phone for quite a while here. Anything, and many more questions I could ask you. But is there more you want to suggest? What you see in the cards in the next few months here in Santa Cruz? I know, for example, we have 28. Emergency shelter beds in the North County. By beds, I mean floor spaces. And
28?
Yeah, that's the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program's emergency. That's it. 28, and that's for more than 750 homeless people. And a city council wants to continue criminalizing sleeping outdoors at night.
Yeah.
What's your reading on that, or anything else that might you might want to tell us about?
I'd like to see the Resource Center make it. I'd like to see them get funded. I think it's a real important basic needs program where you need to get the daily bread, as it were. And that's a real important service. And other than that, I don't think much is going to grow in terms of providing greater services. You know, maybe there's some transitional housing programs or something that are going to come up, but more and more it's going to be, you know, you have to do this. More and more, I think it's going to be, you know, you have to follow this drum if you want to join this band, you know.
You want the mun, you got to follow the drum. All right. Well, Bob Campbell, you have been, of course, worked with the River Street Shelter. You're what, executive director there for a while?
As director, it was actually the executive director was Harry Moriarty through the counseling center. So the River Street Shelter was part of a larger umbrella organization.
And then you ran SOS for a while?
Yes, that's right.
That's the program Pioneer House, where
yeah.
People were who were labeled mentally ill, and also just people generally often could come in and get some kind of help and day interaction before the Homeless Community Resource Center opened up.
Right, and I left there.
And more recently you were head of, what, the Community Health Services? What's the exact...
Right, Community Health Center. It's now Planned Parenthood Westside.
And now you've fled to San Jose. What are you doing over there?
Running a program for seniors, housing program for seniors.
So, you know, it's just impossible to pin you down there, Campbell. Appreciate your coming on the air, and hope you don't get blackballed completely for this broadcast.
We'll see what happens.
All right, Bob.
Bye-bye.
And that was Bob Campbell, and who says we don't say some good things about Karen Gillette, or at least some of my guests do. Indeed, it's important to give credit where credit is due and to criticize where criticism is needed. That's the way I look at it. And indeed, Karen has offered to take a salary cut here, and she's obviously concerned with the maintenance of the Homeless Community Resource Center. I think we all should be. I simply think it's also the place of people who are working there to not blame homeless activists, but in fact to join with them in trying to expand services and to expand basic rights. And various comments by Karen recently around spare changing and encouraging people to support this bogus downtown association campaign about let them eat little yellow cards rather than give away small amounts of money if you want to. It's really a self-serving merchant ploy, which I think is beneath the dignity or the common sense of folks who support homeless people, and I think Karen Gillette is wrong in supporting this, as is Scott Kennedy, for that matter, but not to mention Art Danner and others, but I'm particularly hard on those who have liberal reputations and who trade on those reputations to get support in the community and to influence public opinion, because I think it's particularly treacherous when liberals sell out homeless people. The word sell out, I think, is more appropriate in the case of a politician like Kennedy, who I feel sold out homeless people in supporting anti-homeless laws in 1994, weakening attacks on the Citizens Police Review Board throughout its inception, and more recently, plus his appointee, Michael Hernandez, an incredible joke and disaster, and who has incessant attacks on homeless activists like myself and others at the City Hall Sleepers protest have produced a climate of hostility, have obfuscated and confused and muddied the real issues, which are really quite clear. 28 emergency floor spaces at night for more than 750 homeless people. There's just no way around that statistic, and Kennedy so far has refused to deal with it in any open or pertinent way other than saying, gosh, ain't it too bad, and let's talk about it at the homeless study session and so forth. His one-time moment of glory last December, where he joined with Celia Scott and Catherine Byers asking for a future winter shelter emergency plan, was of course cut short by Rotkin and the council majority, but instead of clearly differentiating himself on this issue and continuing to try to draw public support to changing the anti-homeless camping ban law or pressing for some immediate emergency shelter, he's evaporated and disappeared into the background. He supported a city council study session, or I should say special session, but it was only 4 days ago that finally a report came out of that, which I hope to discuss at greater length on a future show. But we're 2 months down the road, and there's nothing concrete before the council, nothing concrete in terms of any commission to study it. Kennedy has pleaded that he has family crisis that has prevented his doing anything around this issue until recently in the last 2 months. And indeed, a family crisis is a family crisis, but why hasn't he put this matter in the hands of other people? Why is the fate of homeless people to await his family crisis? No, I don't think so. Everyone has a crisis every night who sleeps outside in Santa Cruz, and I think it's a form of special pleading to ask us to sort of forget basic human rights until one individual's family crisis can be resolved. It's obviously not Kennedy's fault. There are a lot of people who bear responsibility here. Matthews and Rotkin are swing votes on the council and really the true power on the council. And people have to look to them for this current situation. They are a pretty slippery bunch on the issue of basic homeless rights. Cynthia Matthews has been
calling me back more regularly. She called me several days ago around the issue of the Food Not Bombs food cutoff and said that she had said nothing whatsoever at the last Downtown Association's Social and Legislative Concerns Committee meeting regarding recommending Food Not Bombs be cut off. She did say, however, that Mike Rotkin in November or December definitely came out with a plan to cut off Food Not Bombs, or at least the sentiments in that direction toward the Downtown Association, but at that point it didn't go anywhere. And the question as to who's pressuring who to do this, I guess, is an important one, and I've been trying to get some straight answers, which it's hard to do. New Leaf owner Chris Quinn is really hard to get a straight answer out of. I talked with her for 15 minutes on the phone, and she was defending Rotkin and Matthews, saying that it was really her idea and not their idea, so it wasn't government officials pressuring the downtown merchants. Again, looks to me, and I'm not clearly advised of all the facts, but looks to me like folks are passing the buck around. And the word from Bob Duran, who has also spoken to Chris Quinn, is that it was pressure from Rotkin and Matthews and the Downtown Association that has put her in the position she's in. But she seemed quite content with her position when I talked to her, that it was perfectly okay for Food Not Bombs not to get food, but Food Not Bombs is still a wonderful organization. It was a strange kind of congratulating an organization that you're starving out. It sounded very bizarre to me, and I'll have to talk to her further and maybe get her to agree to come on the radio if she's interested in talking about this issue and speaking in her own words. And Chris Quinn, if you're out there, you're welcome to call in to 423-4833 and give your own point of view, and I will broadcast it uncensored on the next edition of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, which is a show that happens every Sunday at 11 o'clock on this station, 96.3 FM. But Santa Cruz isn't the only area of interest. San Jose has been a city we've been covering. San Jose is the site of the Community Homeless Alliance of San Jose. And they've been fighting anti-homeless laws that have recently been put into place thanks to trailblazers like Santa Cruz, who passed a similar anti-homeless law back in 1994. San Jose's, of course, is worse. And let's see how Nancy Nichols of the Community Homeless Alliance and her organization are dealing with it. Nancy Nichols.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
So we're talking to Nancy Nichols here, who's part of the San Jose Community Homeless Alliance. Hi, Nancy.
Hello.
I did that before. I apologize. I tend to repeat myself here. So you were calling me probably about some other matters, but I've heard that from Ann Turner of the Community Homeless Alliance that things are getting rough for homeless people in San Jose on the streets after the passage of the sit-down, go-to-jail law recently.
That has been our feedback from the homeless people in our organization, is that the passage of the sit-lie law was sort of an opening door for other sort of ridiculous measures to just basically drive the homeless out. And so the shopping cart issue has, once again, reared its ugly head.
Tell us about the shopping cart issue.
Well, according to the San Jose PD, they have gotten complaints from two fronts. One, of course, the owners of the carts who want them back because it's a valuable thing for them to have, and they can't conceive of letting the homeless use it to store things. Secondly, the downtown merchants are very upset at the sight of a shopping cart of a human being pushing a shopping cart, and they apparently flood the police department with calls whenever they see somebody downtown with a shopping cart.
Is this an organized campaign by the Downtown Association?
I'm not exactly sure. I'm going to try to find out by calling the head of the downtown merchants and finding out what it is exactly that is bothering him and whether or not we can work out some solution besides citing these people and taking up their carts along with the recycling that they have, I think, worked hard to get. A couple of carts, have been full of, canned things, and they're on their way to recycling, and they get cited, and they get everything taken away.
So what they're doing, the merchants in this case and the police combined, are not only are they removing the livelihood of the homeless person, but they're interfering with essentially environmental activities, right?
Yes. I mean, I look at the fact that the homeless recycle as a bonus to the city, not something that they should discourage. So, you know, I will do my best to call over there and see if we can work out an alternative. I think they could have some city-issued carts or some way for the homeless to store their things and some way for homeless who are doing the recycling to do it without being cited. Hello?
Have you been successful in these kinds of appeals in the past, Nancy?
It's sort of, we get sort of, you know, breaks, sort of a few days of relief or whatever, but nothing very permanent, you know.
Now, when we spoke, I guess, a month or so ago on tape, we learned that your demonstration at the mayor's office or down at City Hall, or maybe it was at the Fairmont Hotel or thereabouts, on the occasion of the closing of the armory, did provoke the city to issue some vouchers?
Yes. They reopened the armory for several days, and they gave vouchers to women and children.
And I guess Scott Wagers, you know, you're one of your other Community Homeless Alliance folk, told me that the San Jose business community is particularly apprehensive about seeing the homeless downtown organized in numbers.
Uh-huh.
Is that true?
I guess what I would have to say is that they feel that the sight of homeless people on their streets is has negative impact financially and economically for them, and that's their basis. I'm not sure that that's really all there is to it.
But what I mean is when homeless people show up in an organized fashion downtown, this really freaks out the merchant and business community and the government that supports them, and they tend to start listening more than they did before.
Uh-huh. Yes, I think that's true. I think that's true. And what we need to do is have a sustained movement where we're downtown a lot and frequently. And, you know, because when we go a couple times a month and then we're not around again, of course, you know, it makes it harder for us to maintain our stand.
Now, in late April, the city council passed, I guess, a 9-2 vote on the first reading and then a fairly unanimous vote on the second reading, a bill that makes it illegal for anyone, and I guess this specifically impacts poor people, to sit down within a 66-square-block area of the downtown, except in parks, on benches, at pay cafes, and I guess if you have a walker or something, or some emergency situation.
Uh-huh.
Is that accurate?
Yeah.
And I understand that in response to this, you did a demonstrative walk from your weekly meeting of the Community Homeless Alliance every Tuesday at 11 o'clock when you hold your meeting down to, was it Fairmont Hotel?
We actually went by the Fairmont Hotel and went to the Chamber of Commerce and just, you know, had basically a, you know, discussion group and a prayer vigil, you know, with ourselves pretty much. But, you know, people did notice and wonder what we were doing.
Huh. And how long did the demonstration take all in all?
Just about an hour. You know.
And did the Chamber of Commerce come out and talk to you and give you any satisfaction?
No, they didn't. They didn't.
What about the homeless community en route? Did any of them join you, or did they talk to you about it afterward? Were they encouraged by what happened? Were they discouraged? What was the feeling?
We did have some people join us, you know, as we marched through the downtown, and I think people were encouraged just by, you know, the spirit of our group, trying to make changes and, you know, sticking together. So, yeah, I would say so. I think partly they, it seems like the real effect of the sit-lie law hasn't really resonated with enough people yet. That's what I think. It's maybe going to take someone that they know really being arrested and you know, taken away.
This sit-lie law, Nancy, as I understand it, provides for misdemeanor penalties for the first offense. That is to say, the first time they decide to cite you,
right,
you can go to jail for up to 6 months and pay a $1,000 fine. Is that true?
I think so. Yeah, you probably know better than I do.
Is it true that... Well, as I understand it, they were going to give, the law doesn't actually go into effect until a month after its passage, which is, what, May 23rd or something?
No, it's actually this week. I think it's tomorrow.
Oh, really?
I think so.
So it's earlier than I thought.
Yeah, I heard the 16th.
Wow. And so what, is that the occasion for your call today?
No, it's not. We're not planning a demonstration at this point around that.
Mm-hmm.
But we probably will later on in the summer.
Is that partially because you haven't yet been able to mobilize the troops sufficiently? Or?
I think so. And like I said, I don't think people have really experienced the full effect of it yet. And maybe when that happens, they'll be a little more encouraged to come out. So
you say you were talking about shopping carts. Give us some more details about what police are doing to folks with shopping carts,
how many people you estimate it's happened to, and any particular specific stories that have come to your attention?
Specifically, I know of situations that over at St. James Park, which is a park where they don't want homeless people anyway, where a couple of Spanish-speaking people were, you know, basically everything was just taken away from them. They had no idea, you know, what the violation was, what was happening. They were just, you know, issued a citation and everything, all their belongings in the car were taken away. The other one that I know of is someone, like I said, who had two carts tied together and was on his way to the recycling center and was approached and given a citation and had all the recycling taken away before he could get down there to, you know, be reimbursed for it. And then the others are basically, you know, they just come and they take, you know, tell the people that Lucky's wants the cart back, and, you know, they think that they're doing the right thing by giving the person a bag to put their belongings in, but from the few that I've observed, the bag they give them isn't appropriate, and besides, how is somebody going to drag a bag around? I mean, it's just a pretty ridiculous solution. So we approached both Lieutenant Farmer and Vivian Hart to try to figure out some kind of solution. I believe the city housing department, and especially the homeless coordinator, Vivian, is working on some kind of a storage facility. So that would help people who keep all the belongings in the cart. It won't change the plight of the people doing it.
Have you actually talked to Lucky's and the stores that are supposedly asking for their carts back?
No, I haven't talked to them.
You might want to contact them, and that might be the focus of some kind of a boycott or pressure campaign encouraging people not to patronize these stores because they're going after homeless people. Because if you look at it, what they're saying is not only you can't, they're taking away their mobility, and then they're saying you can't sit down. So that means if they sit down with their stuff, which what are you going to do when you're dragging all your stuff around?
Right.
But they haven't yet issued any sitting tickets, I take it.
No, they haven't.
That's going to be coming right down the road.
It should be coming right after this Friday, yeah.
Any support from the religious community or from the legal community in terms of American Civil Liberties Union?
I can't say that we've really made an attempt yet in that realm. No, to really get support yet.
Have you had any contact with folks in other cities like the Palo Alto homeless who have been actually doing weekly demonstrations in violation of their sit-down law, which is much less harsh than yours, but which is still a law which bars sitting within a 10-block area along their University Avenue, and every, I guess, Monday and Wednesday, or at least every Wednesday when the Food Not Bombs meal is served, they've been going out and sitting down, although I think that Food Not Bombs is currently in hiatus up there because their main Food Not Bomber, Perucho Bluda, also a commentator for KKUP Radio, is away in Europe, but...
Oh, wow.
Been in touch with Palo Alto at all?
No, I just knew about the one demonstration that they did, which got pretty good media coverage, and, you know, on that particular night, they didn't fight anybody or do anything.
Yeah, I think Mountain View is also experiencing, you know, anti-homeless legal paroxysms, as I put it, that kind of, a spasm of response whereby now it's illegal to... peacefully hold up a sign on a median strip or anywhere where cars are coming and going from parking lots, things of that sort. Heard any reports from Mountain View?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, well, that's what I hear, although I haven't heard...
What's going on, basically, is that the homeless are really no longer welcome anywhere, and I think just all the little laws, ordinances, whatever they can do to push them away is just going to become more and more obvious. And maybe it's going to take, something really drastic, you know, before people really do wake up to it and form a more, solid group of people to fight it.
Well, in San Jose, I'm sure you know, the Hispanic community is concerned about police abuse.